Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Peaceful Planet Show. This is host Marcia McMahon. Hope you're having a great Saturday there, wherever you are, where I am. The flowers are coming up, and everything is looking so spring-like and wonderful. And we have a fantastic guest and book to review today titled Courageous Souls, and we're going to be bringing on the author, Robert Schwartz. He is just got a phenomenal book on how we plan our life challenges before birth. And I also have a very special comment about some new music that we're also featuring on the Peaceful Planet. Most of our music is synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray, inspired by John Lennon, George Harrison, Frank Duvall, and Michael and the Band. And you were just listening to The Peaceful Planet, our theme song by Bob Murray. However, we have added a new musical talent to our show, and that would be Queen Ladybug, a new emerging talent in Britain. And she has written a song titled Courage, which is just brilliant and has just a wonderful flavor to it, and it really flows with our title, our book title, Courageous Soul. And she has explained to me that her song is about ascension. So it all fits into our theme of evolution and why we choose the paths we do in life. And so I'd like to set the mood for you today by playing Queen Ladybug's Courage. If we could do that now.
Courage to let me succeed, grab this adventure and have all the love I need. Have all the love I need.
Okay, welcome back. You were listening to Courage by Queen Ladybug, and we are going to tie that with our wonderful book, Courageous Souls, subtitled Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth by Robert Schwartz. And here's a little bit about Robert. In a personal session with a medium in 2003, author Robert Schwartz was astonished to speak with non-physical beings who knew everything about him, not just what he had done in life, but also what he had thought and felt. They told him that he had planned many of his most difficult experiences before he was born. Realizing that a knowledge of pre-birth planning would bring great healing to people and allow them to understand the deeper purpose of their life challenges, he devoted the next 3 years to studying the pre-birth plans of dozens of individuals. The extraordinary insights that emerge speak to our heartfelt, universal yearning to know why. And I would like to also mention that you can find Robert's work online at www.CourageousSouls.com. And I want to open up our phone lines if you would like a mini reading with the angels with myself, or if you have a particular question to ask Robert throughout the interview. I think you're going to be riveted by the information that he has to share with you. And our toll-free number is 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, you may call 888-810-8322. And our phone lines are staying open throughout the show, and we'll announce the numbers again. So a very warm welcome to you, Rob. It's great to have you on Peaceful Planet and to be highlighting your work, Courageous Souls.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. You've written a very profound and awesome book that is some of the best New Age research I have ever seen about the challenges that we face in life and how they might be explained from a soul perspective. I was totally riveted as I was reading your book, and I stayed up late last night finishing every single bit of it. I couldn't put it down. It was just excellent.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, I want to read a little bit here about what we have posted on the BBS show page about these challenges. Rob says here, would you like to understand the deeper meaning of your greatest challenges? So often when something bad happens, it may appear to be meaningless suffering. But what if your most difficult experiences are actually rich with hidden purpose, purpose that you yourself planned before you were born? Could it be that you chose your life circumstances, relationships, and events? So, Rob, do you believe, based on the research that you have now, that we do plan some things, like, for instance, being the parent of a handicapped child, or blindness, or deafness, or some of the amazing handicaps that people are born into this world with?
Yes, I do believe that very firmly. What my research over the last few years has shown is that we plan our lives in great detail before we incarnate, and that includes the quote-unquote bad things that happen to us. But it's important to understand that from our perspective as eternal souls, the things that seem bad to us when we're in body, when we're in personality, these are not truly bad things. They're opportunities for personal and spiritual growth. They're opportunities to acquire wisdom. And perhaps most importantly, it's an opportunity to learn how to express love on the physical plane under very challenging circumstances. And I believe ultimately that's why we choose to incarnate here on Earth.
Mm-hmm. So how did this all begin then for you?
Well, my journey to writing Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth, started in mid-2003. And at that time, I was working in the corporate world in marketing and communications and was feeling very unfulfilled by the work that I was doing. I often felt that if I were to fall off the face of the earth, no one would miss me. Someone else would just be plugged into my role. And I felt that I was not making any kind of unique contribution to the world. And I wanted very much to do that, but I had no idea what that unique contribution might be. And so the idea came to me, why not consult with a psychic medium? I had never done anything like that before, nor had I known anyone who had been to a medium. But in retrospect, I believe now that my spirit guides were whispering this suggestion in my ear. And so I did, in fact, go to work with a medium. And as you mentioned, it was during this initial session that I spoke for the first time ever with my spirit guides, and they introduced me to the concept of pre-birth planning, saying that I had planned many of the challenges I had experienced in life. And of course, my response was, well, why in the world did I want to face these great challenges? And they said, you wanted to face them for purposes of spiritual growth. Now, I might have dismissed this idea, except that they knew everything about me, and this was quite clear earlier in the conversation. They knew everything I had done in my life, everything I had thought, everything I had felt. For example, they referred to a specific prayer I had said to God alone and silently in the privacy of my home 5 years earlier when I had been going through a very difficult time. I had prayed silently to myself, God, please send help. I can't do this alone. And they referred specifically to that prayer, and they said to me, your prayer was answered, by which they meant that additional non-physical guidance had been sent. And the fact that they knew about this prayer, to me, was an astonishing thing, and that they knew everything that had occurred in my life, as you can imagine, that gave them a great deal of credibility. So when they introduced the idea of pre-birth planning, I was listening in rapt attention, and I realized when I heard this idea that it had the potential to bring great healing to people, and so I set about a path to write a book about it.
So your inspiration came in glimpses, I'm sure, but how long was it between the time where you first consulted the medium and realized that this medium was able to truly connect you with your higher self or your spirit guides, your guardian angels, and then suddenly you embark on this totally different path? You leave the corporate world and you begin amassing a huge amount of research about people in the most unfortunate of circumstances, and you come up with the most amazing wisdom that these spirit guides are all able to give. Now, you consulted more than one medium. I believe there were four or five mediums that you consulted throughout the course of the book and the research, correct?
There were six that I worked with. There are four who actually, their work appears in the book, and then there were two who acted as consultants. The four who appear in the book, it's an interesting collection of talents and abilities, and they all complement each other in different ways that allowed me, as the researcher, to obtain information about people's pre-birth plans. So, for example, I worked with a woman in the Chicago area, Deb Dabari, who was able to speak very easily with deceased loved ones. And so if the life challenge, for example, was the death of a loved one, which is one of the chapters in a book, we were able to speak to the ex-fiancé and the son of a woman who had lost both of those people earlier in her life. And we asked them directly, what was the life plan and why were your deaths at a young age planned before all of you incarnated? Then I also worked with Glenna Dietrich, who's able to channel angels and spirit guides. Corby Mitlieb is able to actually channel a person's soul. So I had an opportunity directly to interview people's souls and ask them what was planned and why. And perhaps the most unique ability is Stacy Wells, who is able to both see and hear the pre-birth planning sessions we have with each other and with our spirit guides before we incarnate. So she was able to actually obtain dialogue from the pre-birth planning sessions where souls were talking about which challenges they wanted to experience in the upcoming lifetime and why they wanted to experience them. And the dialogue from these pre-birth planning sessions is actually presented in the book.
I know. I thought that was the most fascinating of all, and I was really impressed with Stacy Wells, and I think I may want to do a follow-up interview with her just because of her abilities. I thought she was extraordinary and accurate. They all impressed me. They were all equally impressive. And, of course, for our listening audience, most of you know that I'm also a channel for spirit, and I consider myself more of a channel than a medium, but it's all the same. And I work with Princess Diana, John Lennon, and others of luminary world status, but I also work with people's personal guides, and very often their guides do come through in my channel sessions as well. So it is a gift that has to be honed, and you know, each person is going to bring a certain flavor to their own channeling, their own mediumship. But I thought it was interesting, too, because it totally verifies the veracity of channeling and mediumship in a way that's it's pretty undeniable. Now, for example, let's take some sample cases of various life situations that you talk about in your book. And since you mentioned, I think it was Valerie and her life losses, she had been engaged with DC, and then she lost him before they were able to get married. And then she also had a son named Dustin, and then he suddenly passed on. And these two situations seem so tragic that one woman would have to bear all this loss in one lifetime. But from the perspective of the soul, she had other issues that she was working out. And I wonder if you could elaborate on what the mediums had to say and what the spirit guides had to say about Valerie's particular choices, if you can remember, or you could even quote from the book if you would like to.
Well, there are a couple important things happening in Valerie's story. One is that there's a karmic balancing going on, and what my research indicated is that the balancing of karma is one of the primary reasons we plan life challenges. So in this case, Valerie lost, as you mentioned, her fiancé, DC, and in fact, he was killed in a tragic diving accident just 48 hours after they became engaged, and she also lost her teenage son, Dustin, to an accidental drug overdose. And what we find out in the research, Corby Mitley channels Valerie's soul. And I ask Valerie's soul, were these two deaths planned before Valerie incarnated, and if so, why? One of the things her soul tells us is that there was a lifetime 1,500 years ago in which she and Dustin and DC were part of a raiding party that attacked a neighboring tribe and caused a great deal of death and suffering. And so there's a karmic balancing going on in this lifetime, and apparently there were also a number of lives since the lifetime 1,500 years ago in which they were playing out themes of love and loss, as Valerie's soul phrases it. And so this theme of love and loss continues in this lifetime. Now, we're also told that her son, Dustin, wanted to have a very short lifetime. There were certain things he wanted to do which would not require very much time here. And so he planned a short lifetime for himself, and he specifically wanted Valerie to be his mother in this short lifetime. And he told her this before they incarnated, and because there was great love between her and Dustin on the soul level, she agreed to be his mother, give him the short lifetime that he wanted for his own learning and his own growth, and she agreed to deal with his loss, his death, at a very young age. So what appears to be tragic from the level of the personality is really an expression of great love on the soul level, and it's a form of service. She was of service to him and also to her ex-fiancé, DC, because she agreed to partner with them in different ways and give them the short lifetimes that they wanted. And what my research shows is that the desire to be of service to other souls is a primary motivation in the planning of life challenges. And Valerie's story is a very strong example of that.
It definitely is. And I was so impressed when reading her story. It particularly moved me, but all of them were equally moving. I was also reading through the story of the handicapped children and the mother who had not one child with autism, but two. And just such a heartbreaking situation, and how she seemed to be tuned into her purpose while she was in college. She did a number of papers on autism and then ended up giving birth to not just one, but two. And they're both very unique in personalities. And regression, but it's not really regression, but it's just a tapping into the soul purpose. And there are past lifetimes involved. There were some past lifetimes where these children had played some incredible roles, and that led into them this lifetime choosing to have autism. Very often the autistic children have very unusual gifts as well. I know I'm also a teacher, and at the college last year I had a very interesting student who was autistic, and he had an amazing math ability where he could calculate figures out to 10 years from now on a calendar in a matter of seconds. He could figure out where I would be on the calendar for my birthday, you know. But otherwise, you know, there were other issues going on in the brain that, you know, that happen with autism. So I wondered if you could maybe speak to people who might be hearing our show and maybe have handicapped children. We're always wondering about what that might be all about and what this woman discovered about her children during the session.
Well, you're referring to Jennifer Stewart's story, and this is in the chapter titled Parenting Handicapped Children. And what we find out in the sessions with the mediums is that in the lifetime immediately previous to this one, Jennifer was a crusading journalist, and she was trying to bring to the attention of the American people the fact that the Nazi war machine was developing in Europe and the concentration camps were forming. And she was trying to get people to believe that this was happening a few years prior to the start of the war. And it was at a time when the public wanted to remain blissfully unaware of what was really going on. And so she was working for a small independent newspaper. She was traveling between New York and Washington, D.C. She was knocking on the doors of all the politicians, trying as a crusading journalist to get them to speak publicly about what was actually going on in Europe. And meanwhile, the souls of the two sons, the boys who are her sons in this current lifetime, they were actually part of the Nazi propaganda machine. They were working in propaganda for the Nazis. And when they passed out of that lifetime and they had their life revealed, they felt that they had distorted truth for a cause that was clearly not the most noble. And so they wanted to plan another incarnation in which they would work on lessons of truthful communication. And they chose Jennifer as their mother because she had been a crusading journalist and she had worked for the truth. So they felt that she could teach them how to communicate truthfully and the true value of communication. And so they chose the autism as a handicap, as a challenge toward communication. And they asked Jennifer, would you be our mother? Would you teach us about communication and how to communicate truthfully? And so once again, out of love on the soul level and out of a desire to be of service, Jennifer said to them, yes, I will serve you in that way. And so they planned an incarnation in which the two boys would have varying degrees of autism, and Jennifer's life challenge would be to teach them the value of truthful communication. Now again, on the level of the personality, this looks like a tragedy, and it looks like it could be meaningless suffering. But if you step back and look at it from the broader soul level perspective, you have a lifetime of service and a lifetime of love between three souls who care very much for each other. And the suffering is very temporary, very transitory. From the perspective of the soul, you know, a lifetime is as brief as a clap of thunder, and then it's over, and the suffering is behind you. But the wisdom that comes out of that lifetime, the knowledge that is gained about truthful communication and the value of communication, that wisdom is incorporated into the soul, and it's there for all eternity. So from the soul level perspective, the suffering is over in an instant, but the wisdom is yours forever. And when Jennifer and her two sons pass out of this lifetime and they do another life review, I believe that they will look at this as an enormously valuable learning opportunity and time that was very well spent. And again, the wisdom that they acquire from teaching each other in these ways, it's incorporated into the soul for all eternity.
I find it rather interesting that her position that she had in the previous lifetime was one of trying to awaken people, and that she was knocking on doors and she was doing everything she could to tell people about the concentration camps, and the American public was completely not hearing that at all. And then these two were Nazis and they were involved in propaganda, and then they come together as mother and children, and I'm seeing where she has, you know, a position where she has the position of being teaching truth to these two individuals who in the previous lifetime obviously distorted through propaganda and misused truth. So another thing that occurred to me about their position is that being autistic, very often these autistic children are dependent on their parents for a lifetime. So they're depending on her love in order to, you know, continue their existence more or less, as well. Although, you know, as they grow in age, perhaps other opportunities will come in. But, you know, it's just so fascinating how these souls are so complex, and they make these choices that are perfect from the point of view of the soul, but they appear to be so imperfect to our human understanding. And yet, I really think with your book that it has so much potential for healing, because if this book were available in every cancer ward, in situations, you know, with Alcoholics Anonymous even, I think people would derive a lot of light and a lot of hope for their situations that seem all but impossible. And there is so much suffering in the world. And as light workers, we all have a unique gift to help, you know, untangle the web of suffering and lead people to a greater understanding of their relationship with God, and not to abandon God if God has not abandoned them, you know. And so it's just a profound message in each of the stories that you share. And what's more, none of this would be revealed without the gift of mediumship. So, you know, I really think it's a book for our time. And I only hope that it will reach the wider audience, you know. But I want to talk about some of the other stories as well. Let me check our time a minute here. Okay, we have about 10 minutes, maybe 15 at the most, and I was wondering if you could perhaps read from one of the chapters on the story of Penelope?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Penelope is a young woman in her 20s, African-American, and she was born completely deaf, and she planned that before she was born. So I'll read you just a little bit from her personal interview to set the stage.
I'm thinking maybe Penelope, page 9, where you go into the session, perhaps.
Would you like me to go straight to the session?
I think so, because I'm just afraid we may not get through everything, but I'll leave it up to you. You're free to do whatever you want.
Well, we can go straight to Penelope's pre-birth planning session. This session is conducted with medium Stacy Wells, who, as I mentioned, is able to hear and see the pre-birth planning sessions we have with one another before we incarnate. And because Penelope is deaf, this dialogue took place over the Internet by instant messenger. So we are typing these messages back and forth to each other, and Stacy types the following. She writes, "I am hearing thought conversation. I am also seeing. Penelope is in a large room. The walls are high. There are many images on the walls, images from past lives. Her main spirit guide is there along with other guides. I see Penelope sitting cross-legged on the floor. Also on the floor are the other souls with whom she will interact in important ways in the lifetime to come. Some of the souls have been with her in previous lifetimes but will remain on the other side while she incarnates. Her main spirit guide stands behind her, directing the proceedings, acknowledging everyone there." And then her spirit guide says, "We are gathered here to help Penelope decide on her life that is to be. Many of you have helped Penelope before in other lifetimes and between lives. Penelope still burns from her experiences in her most recent life and seeks healing in the life that is to be." And that is a reference, by the way, to the fact that her mother was shot by the mother's boyfriend in a previous lifetime, and Penelope heard the gunshots. Then the spirit guide continues, "She asks each of you now to join your energy with hers as she decides what she is to be, what she will and will not experience, and how she may best interact with all here in order to achieve her goals." "They all join hands," Stacy continued. "I see the energy pulsing from one to another until it pulses throughout the room like waves that penetrate everyone there. The first thing Penelope decides is her body color, as that will be part of the connection between herself and the soul who was and is her mother. As Penelope decides this, I see her soul take on the darker color, trying it on for size, but also adopting it as her own. There is thought conversation between Penelope and her mother, agreements made for her mother to give birth to her and take care of her in ways she could not in the previous lifetime. Penelope expresses to the soul who is her mother that she still feels a great need to be cradled in her mother's arms. There is an agreement made about lots of cuddling time. But then the memories of what she witnessed in the previous lifetime spring to her mind, and Penelope asks, please, not to let that happen again. The man who shot her mother in that lifetime stands up among the crowd and agrees not to inhabit physical form while Penelope and her mother are in physical body. Then he sits back down. Penelope, but the sounds, I am afraid I will still hear them. I don't want to hear them at all. Spirit guide, my dear, you know that they will continue to resonate within your hearing range. Would you prefer to be born deaf so that no sound will ever remind you of those sounds again? You will continue to be influenced by them and by what you saw and experienced, only you will feel them at a deeper subconscious level where it will be easier for you. Penelope, yes. Spirit guide, wait. He holds up his hand. Before you agree to this so readily, think on this first. You will continue to be influenced by the atrocities you witnessed in that life because you have told me it is your desire to complete your healing process. You will still feel them, but at a level you will be unable to define for quite some time. Penelope, yes, this is what I want and what I wish to do. Her energy changes somewhat as she gets more serious. The excitement of being born and living again has now been somewhat overshadowed as she realizes what she will work on, but she agrees and moves on to the next step in the planning process. Penelope, I want to give to other people in some capacity. I want to expand my ability to be compassionate. In my last life, my ability to express compassion ended when my mother died. I want to care compassionately for many people. Spirit guide, you will have the opportunity to use your own experience in the life that is to come to turn your self-knowledge outward and give to others in a kind, compassionate, and caring manner, and to teach others as well. So that's an excerpt from Penelope's pre-birth planning session. And if I could point out just a couple of the important themes that are taking place here, and these are themes that I saw in pretty much all the pre-birth planning sessions that we were able to access. One of the things you see here is a desire for souls to be of service to each other. And there are two examples of that. One is quite obvious, but the other is really quite subtle. The obvious example is when Penelope says she wants to expand her ability to be compassionate and care compassionately for many people. But there's another example here of a soul wanting to be of service that is often overlooked, and that is when the soul who murdered her mother in the previous lifetime stands up and volunteers not to inhabit physical form while Penelope incarnates. And what is happening there is really quite remarkable, because he has certain lessons that he would like to continue learning in body, but he's agreeing to defer those, to defer his own learning and growth, so that Penelope will be more comfortable in her upcoming incarnation. And, you know, I'm often asked in my research, did I ever see any evidence of evil souls or bad souls? And I cannot tell you definitively that there is no such thing, but I can tell you that I have never seen any scrap of evidence to indicate that such a thing exists. And this, I think, is a good example of that, because we have here a soul who committed a murder in a previous lifetime. And so from the level of the personality, we would often condemn this person. We would say this is a bad person because he committed murder. And yet here on the soul level, he is as loving as any other soul. His desire to be of service to Penelope is as great as her desire to be of service to humanity. And very lovingly, very altruistically, he volunteers not to incarnate while she is in body. So to me, that speaks to the loving nature of all souls. And the role that he played in the previous lifetime, the role of murderer, that's not who he is at the soul level. That's not what souls are like. Souls are quite literally, in my view, made of the energy of love. And at the soul level, he is just as loving as any other soul.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting and very good point, because I do think that all of us tend to go completely to judgments. And, of course, religion teaches something entirely the opposite about the truth that's brought out into your book, which is that people like that burn in hell forever. There's no escape, you know, that
right.
kind of doctrine, dogma
that's
thing,
right.
which is primitive. And it's just our own ideas superimposed on what we think happens in the afterlife. But I have worked with Diana and many others, Mother Teresa, who work on the other side, and observed what they have told me over the years about what it's like on the other side. And it's also a school for learning on the other side. And if children happen to die early, which many do on the earth plane, due to the extreme injustices that still exist in our world, you know, things like, unjust murder of young children, which goes on in third world countries all the time, these children cross over and are quite confused. And so there have to be plans in place even for these extreme situations that do come up, and there is healing given to them as well as education on the other side. In particular, I have been told that both Diana and Mother Teresa work with children in an orphanage setting where they are given lots of love and attention from both of these two great women, but there are other volunteers all over the place who try to tend to these children and help them along in their healing journey. So what we think of as tragedy on the earth plane very often translates to a growth experience for the soul. And so from that perspective, I really commend your work. But I had never seen anything like this about the pre-planning birth sessions anywhere in anyone else's channeled work. And I thought it was extraordinary that you, Rob, had the dedication to pursue this with the vigilance that you did. I'm curious, how did you ever find all these people willing to volunteer their time and their personal stories? And how did you get the mediums to come in and do readings for these people who may or may not have been open to channeling or mediumship? It's amazing. I think Spirit was behind you in this work, but considering that you're not yourself a medium, it's all very interesting how this all came together and how you got these people to agree to all these different things. Obviously, it might have been another soul contract on their part.
Well, in terms of finding the people I interviewed in the book, most of that was done through posting messages on the Internet. And over 2,000 people contacted me during the three-year period I was researching the book, and they were primarily motivated by a desire to be of service. They wanted to take the challenges they had experienced and share their story with the world so that other people facing similar challenges would be helped by their story. In terms of the mediums I work with, I agree with you completely. I feel that Spirit brought us together. And I could not possibly on my own have found a collection of such talented people, all of whom were able to access information about people's pre-birth plans. I really believe that our guides brought us together, and I'm quite sure that I have pre-birth agreements to work with those people on this book. And an interesting thing is that I also have pre-birth agreements with certain people to tell their stories in the book. One of the stories that comes up later in the chapter on physical accidents is a woman, Christina, who planned before birth to be in a bomb explosion. And when we go into her pre-birth planning session, I'm there. And as you can imagine, that came as quite a shock to me. And able to hear the conversation that I had with Christina, in which I ask her, I tell her I'm planning to write a book on the pre-birth planning of challenges. May I tell your story in my book? And she says, oh, yes, and she's quite delighted. And so she and I make a plan before we incarnate for her to tell her story in the book.
So, you know, it makes me wonder, too. I mean, I'm also an author, and I've written two books with Princess Diana. And, when Diana died, I grieved. I thought this was really, really tragic. I felt her, you know, presence. Everyone felt her presence everywhere during the times of the funeral. But I didn't actually connect with her in channeling for at least 3 years after her death. And then subsequent to that, I've met up with other people who channeled Diana who were given information at the time of her death. One friend of mine in particular comes to mind, Rose Campbell, who at the time of her death was channeling Diana. She channeled her the night of the death. And Diana and her oversoul apparently gave Rose some information that said that Diana's purpose was not over and that she will continue to have an impact on the earth plane through her channels, and at one point or another her channels would be recognized and the work that she has done through me would come out. So I was not referenced by name in this early session with Diana, but apparently the guides knew that she would be doing this work for world peace, which I have been working on with her for 7 years now. And I often wondered, was this something that I had planned with her in some other lifetime or whatever, but I never gave it a second thought. And then subsequent to that, I got an email from another friend who channels Diana, and sure enough, Diana mentioned looking into the Akashic Records in which we had shared a lifelong friendship in England and that we were best of friends. So we had this instant connection from another lifetime. So anyway, it ties in with what you're saying. And now I want to get a reading with Stacey Wells. You know, I'm curious to find out more. But I have had lots of confirmations from other of Diana's channels throughout the world. So, you know, and I have written two books, too. So, you know, I wonder if this whole idea of you know, are you destined to be an author? Are you supposed to come in with a script? Or do we accept the challenge of spirit? And because we're living in an age of what I would consider enlightenment, although I know some of the guys in your book have called it other ages, you know, do we come in with these prearranged scripts and then something comes along in life that sort of jars us, that says, wake up, you've got something to do here, you've got to get busy in another direction. So I really think it takes great courage to do what you've done, Rob, and it's a remarkable read. It's just a fabulous book.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, you know, another, let's see how much time, yeah, we still have about 3 or 4 minutes here. Another topic that was particularly moving for me to read in was the chapter Drug Addiction and Alcoholism. And I've had some of that in my own family. I've got a younger brother who struggles with this issue so much. And the family is just at wit's end with what to do to try to help. And so often, you know, you think these people are on the right path and things are going to change, and then it just comes up again and again and again. And, you know, you just have to wonder, why would, on a soul level, a soul choose to come in with this addiction and basically destroy themselves in the process of this kind of a thing? You know, so I wondered if you could elaborate a little bit about what you learned with the interviews that you did with, say, the mother of the drug addict or the addict, and how that relationship, you know, I think there were a couple of relationships that you highlighted in that chapter. It was awfully good reading.
Thank you. Well, there is a chapter titled Drug Addiction and Alcoholism, and there are two stories in that chapter. There's a gentleman, Pat, who planned before birth to experience several decades of alcoholism, and his primary motivation was that he wanted to reclaim his spirituality. In past lifetimes, he had lost his sense of God, his feeling of connection with God, and so he planned a life in which alcoholism would drive him quite literally to his knees in a feeling of disconnection from God, and then from that place, he would call out to God for help and reconnect and reestablish his spirituality. And in fact, that's actually what happened. He went through several decades of alcoholism and reached a low point where he was so intensely motivated to reclaim his spirituality that he did just that, and now he's one of the most, he's a deeply, deeply spiritual person. The other story in that chapter is a woman, Sharon, and her son, Tony. And they plan before birth for Tony to have a drug addiction. And not only do they plan a drug addiction, but they specifically choose heroin as the addictive drug, because their belief is that it's strong enough and potent enough to bring about the sort of learning that they want to acquire from this experience. Now, in their case, what they are really trying to do by planning this experience is to show the world what love looks like. And by that I mean, Sharon was tested greatly again and again and again to love her son unconditionally as he was going through his heroin addiction and really causing a great deal of trauma for the family. And they wanted to do this as a form of service to humanity. They wanted to be able to show other people this is what unconditional love between a mother and a son looks like. And they did just that. And they did even more than that, because Sharon is a nurse, and she went on to found a treatment program called Mothers on Methadone, which some of your listeners may know is a chemical substitute for heroin, and it's used in the treatment of heroin addiction. And she specifically founded a program in which pregnant women who have a heroin addiction can come in and be placed on methadone treatment and weaned off of the heroin so that their babies aren't born with a heroin addiction. And this program is something that she planned before she was born to offer to humanity as a form of service. And the plan was that she would take all of the learning and all of the pain that she experienced through her son's heroin addiction and funnel all of that passion and all of that commitment to service into the Mothers on Methadone program. And now she's founded this program in the New England area. It's tremendously successful. It's helped many, many pregnant women get off heroin and give birth to healthy babies. And it was all a form of service that she and her son Tony planned before they were born. So it's really quite a remarkable story. And I think the value of it is that it helps us, again, shift from the personality perspective to the soul-level perspective. You know, from the level of the personality, the heroin addiction seems to be meaningless suffering. But when looked at from the level of the soul, we see a much greater plan, and we see a plan that is based on beauty, service, and love.
And then you think of all those other innocent babies that are really being born right now that are being weaned from that by her program, and the mothers as well are being weaned off the heroin addiction. So hopefully she's changing lives with that. So she chose the hardship, and she turned it around into an act of love and service, which is, I think, a really important lesson to keep in mind with any hardship. If you are experiencing hardship in a family situation or with yourself or something that happened in the past that you have no explanation for that's permanently left a mark on you, you know, any number of reasons can be for these kinds of afflictions and these kinds of situations. And I think from the wisdom of the higher perspective of the soul, it's just incredible what you've discovered in your research. It's just phenomenal and brilliant what these souls are really all about. And apparently only through limitation and suffering in some ways can we reach the so-called perfection of the soul. But I also think, and I came across an interesting message that I'd like to share with our listeners because it fits in so perfectly with what you're sharing. And usually I bring in messages from spirits, from my guides and angels, very often Archangel Michael. But this is an Archangel Michael message from another very well-known light worker, and this was shared in the Circle of Light e-zine that many light workers read. And I want to just read a paragraph or so that confirms completely from Archangel Michael what you've been saying in your research, too, and I just couldn't resist reading it, and I hope you don't mind me sharing, Rob.
Sure, please do.
Titled, You Have All the Virtues of God. This is Archangel Michael speaking to Rona Herman, and her email is ronastar@earthlink.net, and that's how it's copyrighted here. No matter where you choose to incarnate on the spectrum of light and shadow in this lifetime, it is not necessarily where you belong. You chose your family lineage, your physical vessel, and the circumstances of your life. It was decided with the help of your angelic guides and guardian angels what the best overall experiences would be to assist you to heal old negative thought patterns and resolve ancient karmic issues in order to return to balance and harmony and attain self-mastery once more. We have told you that you have encoded within your DNA and divine blueprint all the virtues, attributes, qualities, and aspects of our Father, Mother, God. So just from those few words from Archangel Michael through Rona Herman, I confirmed your work, and I want to say, too, that those listening need not feel any despair regarding whatever it is that they've come into in this lifetime with or whatever issues they may have to work out in their family, etc., because in this particular age, we are all given the ability to use those particular stumbling blocks, limitations, handicaps, etc., to our own perfection. And we're talking about soul perfection here. We're not necessarily talking about complete physical healing, but in some cases, I believe that Archangel Michael is referring to complete healing. I know I went through something in my early 30s that was quite detrimental and devastating. And I was able to heal completely for this, and it was a trait that was in the rest of my family, and I feel that I was given this handicap in order to completely heal, and I was told by mediums at the time that I would have a complete healing. And I never completely believed it, but I did hold to that, and it did happen to be true. So it is entirely possible when with this particular energy that is with us in this particular new age, we are able to move beyond some of our limitations as well. That was a fortunate thing for me. But I think it's possible even no matter what the limitations are, and I think that's the meaning of your book. And your message was just fantastic, and we want to mention your website and mine before we go, and then we're going to play some very special music. And it was really a great honor speaking with you, Ralph, and I'm so glad you took the time on short notice to visit with us on the Peaceful Planet today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yes, and your work is wonderful, and we want to invite our listeners to visit www.courageoussouls.com, where you can pick up a copy of the book. Is the book available right on the site, Rob?
Yes, at www.courageoussouls.com on the Order the Book page. It's also available on Amazon, and it can also be ordered through any bookstore or library in the country.
Oh, wonderful. And I want to invite our listeners also to visit my website, where you can also pick up a copy of my book, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, and I am on www.dianaspeakstotheworld. And if you ever have an angel reading request, you can also email me at dianaspeaks@hotmail.com. And we've kind of come to the conclusion here of the Peaceful Planet. We're going to close out with the song Eternal Opus, as inspired by John Lennon through the mediumship of Bob Murray. And it is a song dedicated to the eternal opus of our own soul. So thank you for sharing all these wonderful insights, and I hope sometime, Rob, we can talk again in the future and maybe bring some of your medium friends in. I'd love to do an interview with them, too. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
All right, and thank you again to our listeners for listening to Peaceful Planet, and we close out with Eternal Opus by Bob Murray. Thank you again. See you next week.